Welcome to the broadcast.
Every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
Thanks for tuning in.
It's Rosie on the house. Your weekend wake-up tradition.
Country boys and girls getting down on the porch.
Come on around back, Arizona. It is Saturday morning. 8 o'clock, the Outdoor Living Hour. We start a brand new month, the first broadcast of April, which means we're talking farm fresh commodities. Agriculture in Arizona is a $23 billion industry, although I don't know, adjusted for inflation, I think we're like a $200 billion industry now.
Right, exactly.
We've got Julie Murphy, the spokeswoman for the Arizona Farm Bureau in studio, and you always bring a special guest, one of our local farmers and ranchers, and our goal is to tie into the listening audience what's coming out of our current farms, crops, ranches in real time, and what items to look for, so you know you're buying local, it's fresher, better grown, and you're supporting your local farmer.
Yes, thank you, Romy, for always having us on. We love doing this, and you know, beef is one of our largest commodities. It flip-flops between dairy and beef, and beef is what we do in Arizona to produce quality beef is amazing. And so I brought two of my favorite ranchers in studio today, Andy and Stephanie Smallhouse. Known them for some time, and they have a ranch that is now, 140 plus years old, I think.
Close to it.
Close to it.
I think we're at 139.
But who's 139.
Counting? So but who's keeping track?
Who's keeping record? But I have to say, I'm kind of proud of myself. I was that close. But anyway, the other thing I want to point out, because Arizona beef is one of our largest agriculture commodities, we also produce enough beef here in the state of Arizona to feed more than 8 million Americans. But since the small houses on their Carlink Ranch have been doing it for 140 years, not you two specifically, but the previous generations, you've fed a lot of people. And so, Andy, I kind of want you to give us a little bit of a lowdown about your history.
Oh, well, it's sort of neat. I mean, I have a real passion for it. I, you know, went to school for it, range and animal science, and my wife, I don't think she knew what she was getting into, but we farm and ranch, and we're way back when, actually, my family marketed direct. They marketed a lot. They had contracts to the military, and that's why they got in the business. And beef was a commodity that are high in demand in those days. And they actually had their own slaughterhouse, and then we did away with that. We sort of downsized. I've actually increased back the size of the ranch, and now we're trying to market direct again, which is sort of crazy because everything's sort of come full circle. But we feed close to probably 12,000 people, depending on what the average consumption is.
Wow.
With our ranch.
With what you produce.
With what we produce on our ranch alone. So. That's
and it's all been on Carlink Ranch. Talk about sustainability. If your son pursues ranching, your son or daughter, that would be the sixth generation, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm fifth generation. And it's actually really exciting times, I think, because the technology, people don't think of agriculture ranching as using technology, but agriculture uses some of the highest technology, you know, whether it's farming or ranching. And I mean, there's still stuff you have to do manually, of course, like building fence and so forth. But we're doing a lot. We're using a lot of technology like DNA testing with our cattle, where we can tell what the carcass is going to come out like pretty close. And it's getting more and more accurate in between the EPDs, which is expected progeny difference of animals, and the DNA testing. We DNA test a lot of our heifers.
Wow.
And that tells us what their carcass merit, gives us a good idea what, rather than having to, in the old days, you had to actually process them, pull the hide off and see what your marbling and tenderness was, you know, and so it was sort of a guessing game. But now there's a lot of tools that we have that they're exciting to be able to use.
And Romy gets to go home with some beef from Carlink Ranch. I'm a little bit jealous, but I guess I need to get my butt out there or
Although
something.
I think I think I've heard you talk before. You raise your own beef, don't you, Romy?
We do. Good memory.
I thought so.
But I'll take yours.
Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad when you taste ours, and then you think to yourself, "Oh, what am I? What should I be doing differently?" No, just kidding.
Well, I have another question for you. It has to do with longevity. Just last year, Carlink Ranch received Arizona Farm Bureau's new program recognition, the Century Ranch Recognition. That was given out during our annual meeting, which takes place in November. So, and either of you can answer this question. What do you think has contributed to the longevity of Carlink Ranch? Besides some of the new exciting things you're telling us about genetics and DNA testing and all that fun stuff.
Well, I have to say my wife.
Because whatever.
She does all the politics, and there is a lot of politics, believe it or not, people don't realize, involved with ranching and regulations and so forth. And she's really more important than I am, I feel, on the ranch. But another answer to that question would be the diversity. I think we have like five different businesses that are surrounded around the ranch and farm, and we've diversified over the years, and I think that, and you know, and my dad always, you know, and you know, I trained me to sort of think ahead. He was always thinking ahead by like he cleared a bunch of farmland along the river there, and that helps us during droughts and so forth, and just preparing long-term thinking years down the road has sort of kept us going.
So you're always looking around the corner. One of the things I'm struck is you talked about the diversity, and that's one of the reasons. So you not only have your cow-calf operation, but you have the mesquite wood business, you have the cactus. Talk about longevity, because sometimes you can't sell those 3-foot cactus for what?
That's really a business for the next generation. Yeah, We're starting it, and then maybe they'll benefit from it.
So you're one of the first, this will be interesting for the listeners, the first commercial-scale saguaro cactus nursery growers. Am I saying that right?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say one of the first, but I mean, well, yeah, there's not a whole lot known about it because most of the cactus are harvested off a property, moved from one property to the next, and there's not we're probably the largest scale that grow cactus from the seed.
Amazing.
And we make our own mulch. We're learning as we go, but we're trying to increase the growth rate. But we have about 150,000 cactus altogether. But like Stephanie said, they're most of them are pretty small.
Well, and really what we, you know, we saw the advantage we saw in adding the cactus to our ranching business is that, you know, beef is a commodity, which means we don't control the price of it. So what the consumer's paying in the grocery store, we don't set that price. That price is, you know, months and months away from the last time we see that animal. And so we needed to invest in something for the future that we could control the price of. We set the price of how much we want to sell those cactus for, actually based on what it costs us to grow them, which beef doesn't work the same way. and they don't need a lot of water. So in Arizona, looking into the future of what our, you know, our cycles might look like in terms of moisture, that's something that you asked that question about longevity. And I think that from my observations, I've learned so much about Andy's family in the last 20 years that every generation has been progressive in thought of what to expect for the future. And so in order to do that, if you're thinking generationally, you try to put into place things on the operation that may not benefit Andy and I, but they certainly, hopefully, if we do it right, will benefit Johnny and Hannah. And so things take so long to do when you work with natural resources that you really have to think ahead of time. So
you're always looking around the corner is what strikes me about it. You know, on that point, and you having come into the ranching business, Stephanie, basically when you married Andy, because that's not your background. So obviously it was new to you until you met Andy. Talk about the experiences of meeting him and now your ranch life.
You're going to need more time.
It's too early on a Saturday morning to talk about the experience of meeting Andy. But no, actually, you know, I feel like almost like it's at this point it's been, you know, I've lived on the ranch longer than I haven't lived you know, on the ranch. And so it's just sort of ingrained into me. And it's still a learning curve. Like, I still am learning things about the ranch operations and things that we do. And but, you know, my background is in natural resources, so it was a natural fit for me in terms of, you know, we live pretty isolated. And so you have to really kind of appreciate being out in the sticks by yourself and find appreciation in you know, the environment around you, not necessarily, you know, you don't find entertainment like people do in town. Let's just say that. So, but it was a natural fit and I love it. And, it was an unexpected turn in my life, but I'm glad that it happened.
That is neat. Let's talk a little bit about forage crops, because that's actually the commodity for this month. Well, most obviously cattle can't live without the right grasses and forage crops. You do grow some crops also. What are the crops that you grow, Andy?
Yeah, we grow wheat, oats, barley, alfalfa, quite a bit of alfalfa, and mainly crops for some sorghum Sudan in the summer. We'll be getting ready to plant Sudan and sorghum Sudan, mainly crops for the cattle or crops to produce hay. All of our crops right now are to feed the cattle.
For our naturalists and our hikers that are listening, if they're out and about, what kind of grasses in southern Arizona, because that's basically where Carlink Ranch is, what kind of grasses would they run into that cattle really like, that grow naturally?
Well, we have...
I've seen him eat prickly pear. They're not picky.
Yeah, they are picky. Yeah.
Thank goodness. No.
Yeah, we have probably 30 different grass species. You know, there's a lot of grama grass that I could go on and on. But one thing that we do to help manage our... grasses on the range is our farmland. Actually, we've gotten national awards on our range management because we're able to pull our cattle down, most of our cattle down during the summer. The growing season of most of the grasses we have on our range is our warm season grasses. And so the best way to reproduce those warm season grasses is to let them go to seed. So we pull the cattle off the range during the after the monsoon season and let them go up to seed. So they all go to seed ideally, and then we put the cattle back on there, which basically plants the seed, you know, and you can use cattle as a real tool to manage, to better manage the range
awesome.
Line. We're talking with Arizona Farm Bureau. We've got Julie Murphy, the spokeswoman, in, and local farmer ranchers, the small houses from the Carlink Ranch. We'll be back right after this.